Last week, the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission began looking into the causes of the 2008 economic meltdown, and at times some of the testimony has been contentious. We are joined now by Andrew Ross Serkin, a chief mergers and acquisitions reporter and columnist for the New York Times and author of Too Big to Fail, the inside story of how Wall Street and Washington fought to save the financial system and themselves, which is published by Viking. And I'm very pleased to welcome Mr. Serkin to our show today. Hi, welcome back.
Hey, how are you? Thank you for having me.
Before the commission started its work last week, you wrote an article in the Times in which you suggested questions that they should be asking. Do you think they've been on the right track so far?
Well, I have to say I was actually very impressed, more impressed than I thought I was going to be with the general tone of the commission's questions and gratified in part because one of the original questions was to all of the CEOs to actually answer the questions that was in the column. So they have to actually provide written answers to that column in the next couple of weeks.
Well, how much power does this commission really have?
Well, that actually is a bigger question, which is they don't have subpoena power, and they don't have a lot of the types of powers to really pursue the kind of almost criminal-like inquiry that some people might be expecting when you think about the PCORA Commission, which was the commission set up after the Great Depression to look into some of the banking practices. That commission did have subpoena power, and frankly, there were indictments and obviously lots of reform and changes, including Glass-Steagall, which separated investment banks and commercial banks. This commission, at the moment at least, does not have those powers and is hoping that all of these banks and bankers are going to be participating on a voluntary basis, which obviously raises questions about how deep and how far they really will get.
In your article last week, you suggested that the commission focus on Goldman Sachs' betting against the investments it was selling, which is pretty much where the commission's chairman, Phil Angelides, started off when he was quizzing Goldman CEO Lloyd Blankfein. We have a clip. Let's take a listen.
Well, I'm just going to be blunt with you. It sounds to me a little bit like selling a car with faulty brakes and then buying an insurance policy on the buyer of those cars. It doesn't seem to me that that's a practice that inspires confidence in the markets.
Every
I'm not talking about your own positions.
Every
I'm talking about betting against
of an
the security.
Asset here is an institution, okay. Probably professional-only investors dedicated, in most cases, to this business.
Representing pension funds who have the life savings of police officers,
these
teachers.
Are the professional investors who want this exposure.
Although this commission is looking for the causes of the financial crisis, it also has a fair amount of political theater. Is that an important goal of the proceedings, you think?
Well, you know, there are two ways to look at political theater. One is just to suggest that it's useless. The other is to suggest that it's meaningful in terms of helping address the public outrage. And in some respects, creating enough outrage, frankly, to put pressure on people in Washington, both in the Senate and Congress, to pursue stronger reform. So you can look at the political theater issue in two respects, but I do think at this moment in time, in this critical juncture in the national conversation, seeing these CEOs up there speaking, hearing their answers, getting at some of these critical issues, I think is very, very important to the American public and to the reform effort in terms of getting some type of explanation.
Well, wasn't Blankfein arguing that people who bought those assets wanted that kind of exposure? Do we know if
yes.
That's the case?
Mr. Blankfein's explanation is both satisfying and unsatisfying in the following respect. And just to bring the audience in on exactly what this is all about, Goldman Sachs was bundling what we describe as lousy mortgages into these things called CDOs, collateralized debt obligations, and then selling them to investors. At the same time, Goldman Sachs, using its own money, shareholder money actually, had its own view that these investments were lousy investments. And so what they were doing was betting that they were going to go down. So Goldman on one side is shorting these investments, and at the same time, For other clients, they're selling them to them. So, and of course, as you can imagine, it all wound up that Goldman Sachs made money and the clients lost money because they were lousy investments. Mr. Blankfein's contention is that the people who were buying these CDOs, A, knew exactly what they were, and B, wanted them and understood the risks. They are, quote unquote, sophisticated investors in that these were not being sold to mom and pop or retail investors. These were being sold to hedge fund managers and people who run large institutional money. But one of the main points that was made was large institutional money. When you hear that phrase, that really often means pension money. And pension money is often teachers and firemen and all sorts of regular Joes.
Now, not only did Mr. Blankfein appear, but we also heard from Jamie Dimon of J.P. Morgan Chase, John Mack of Morgan Stanley, Brian Moynihan of Bank America. Did we hear many mea culpas during the hearings?
This was not this was not a hearing where you heard the phrase "I'm sorry" many times, if any. In fact, I'm not sure I counted it once.
Well, maybe Mark McGuire didn't appear before this hearing.
Right. The favorite phrase was "mistake." Mm-hmm. Mistakes were made, and they did say that repeatedly. And I would also suggest you, to Mr. Blankfein's credit, in fact, he said, with hindsight, obviously, I would have done things very differently. So these were not men who were saying that they had done everything perfectly, but they were clearly not laying themselves on the mat in mercy of the American public by apologizing. John Mack, I should say and should note, the CEO or former CEO, now chairman of Morgan Stanley, in the last hearing actually did apologize. He's actually one of the only CEOs who has been as blunt and blatant with his apology as any of them have been.
Well, they're all CEOs who still have banks. Do we know if the commission plans on calling people like former Lehman Brothers CEO Dick Fuld or Joseph Gassano, head of AIG's financial products division? And what about the policymakers who instituted policies that allowed for this situation to occur?
Right. Well, I expect that we will be hearing from people like Ben Bernanke and Tim Geithner and many of the other politicians who were involved and, frankly, other people within the business. You asked about a very interesting individual in Dick Fuld, the CEO of Lehman Brothers. As I said to you at the beginning of this, it's all voluntary, so you have to show up on your own, and the same for Joe Cassano. Both of them are in a slightly different situation than the others in that there are ongoing criminal investigations going on into what happened at Lehman and into what happened at AIG. And so I suspect, at least in the short term, as long as those things are ongoing, it's going to be very hard for the commission to get those individuals to come and speak to them.
My guest is Andrew Ross Sorkin, reporter and columnist for The New York Times and author of Too Big to Fail, also the founder and editor of Dealbook on NewYorkTimes.com. I'd like to play another clip of Jamie Dimon of J.P. Morgan Chase being asked by Commission member Douglas Holtz Aiken last Wednesday about J.P. Morgan Chase's financial models.
In mortgage underwriting, somehow we just missed, that home prices don't go up forever and that it's not sufficient to have stated income in home prices.
If you'd been doing... You had been doing stress tests prior to the crisis.
Yeah.
Did you do a stress test that showed housing prices falling?
No. I would say that was probably one of the big misses. We stressed almost everything else, but we didn't say home prices going down 40%. And that's now part of the stress test.
Now, wouldn't some argue that it was J.P. Morgan Chase's job to at least wonder what would happen if housing prices went down?
That is actually one of the more cringeworthy moments of that hearing, I must say. And I would tell you that Jamie Dimon was not alone in that most of the other CEOs and other banks did not do those stress tests either. And frankly, that was the biggest problem. And when you go back and look not just at what the Wall Street banks were stress testing and thinking about, the idea that none of these people were thinking the market could go down is kind of remarkable. But Alan Greenspan, who I also suspect and have already heard is probably going to end up testifying in front of this committee at some point was somebody who also was not taking into consideration the idea that the markets would fall, and so especially the real estate market. It was a very odd time, and it's inexcusable, but it was an odd time in this kind of massive groupthink around the country, both on Wall Street and Washington, during the sort of 2004, 5, 6 period, where all of a sudden people believed that somehow some new paradigm had been created around real estate. And boy, were they wrong.
But in explaining it, they all seem to be saying mistakes were made. They're not saying anybody is to blame. Mistakes are made is the passive, isn't it? In talking about the lack of accountability in the financial industry, Chairman Angelides said maybe this is like murder on the Orient Express. Everyone did it.
Well, and that's exactly right. I would say, having now covered Wall Street for 10 years and spent the last year intensively working on this book, Too Big to Fail, that most of these people, frankly, are to blame. And one of the things that's so interesting about our society is we do want to blame, and we like to blame individuals. And I have to tell you that it is so hard in this specific crisis. If you want to point at two or three people, sure, you can do it. But really, the blame is so far across the board. I mean, you would have to. I mean, someone said to me, "Who's going to jail?" I said, "You'd have to build a new jail because you'd have to send everybody to it. You really would. It's that difficult."
And an editorial on Friday, the Wall Street Journal complained that the hearings didn't call on Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
Well, I imagine they also will be getting to Fannie and Freddie at some point. They also didn't call on AIG in this case. But I think they're going to get to all of those issues. Again, the real question is what comes out of it. Do we get real financial reform? This committee's only real project is creating a report, kind of like the 9/11 Commission did. They're going to create a report that says what went wrong and hope that that helps lead to better reform. Is that going to be enough? I don't know, and frankly, as a professional skeptical journalist, I am skeptical that we're going to get there.
Well, the report isn't due until December of this year. I'm assuming that there'll be a lot of legislation before that. So will it have much of an impact? December 15th
is... And from a timing perspective, you're also making a very important point. If this does come out in December, depending on whether some of the legislation that's already in the House gets to the Senate, we may already have that legislation, though I will also tell you that if I was a betting man a year ago, I would have told you we would have had legislation already, and it is shocking that we haven't. So there's a possibility that their timing may be perfect.
Now, we don't have much time ourselves, but what about the makeup of the commission? As I mentioned, it's headed by Phil Angelides. He's a former California state treasurer and gubernatorial candidate, failed. Do we know why he was chosen to take up this effort?
Well, there have been many questions about who's on this commission and why and how politically oriented it is. There's a lot of Democrats on the commission, which, of course, has the Republicans up in arms. You don't have any real working people with serious financial backgrounds on this commission, which is something that I think also has raised some questions. Again, you know, this is part of the sort of grander political theater, but we can only hope that given the type of questions they have been asking, which I do think were actually much stronger, as I said at the beginning of the program, than I ever imagined. I thought this was going to be at a much lower level, that we might be surprised.
Well, we did. The Watergate hearings were watched by a majority of Americans. 9/11 Commission produced a report which became a bestseller. Do you think this will have that kind of cultural impact?
I just don't know. I just don't know. I think it's going to be much harder. You don't see them going after this group the same way that Watergate Commission did at all. And one of the things that's hard, and I think last time actually I was on your program, we talked about this, that the better the economy gets, or at least seems, the harder it is for any of these people to do their job. Because the popular anger, the way people feel across the country is different. And when people think things are getting better, they're less inclined and less angry. And the farther we get away from the crisis, I think the harder it is for them to do their job.
Hugh in Brooklyn writes, in hindsight, Lloyd Blankfein would do things differently. How? All reports indicate that Goldman Sachs is going back to doing exactly the same things that they were doing before.
Well,
Do you see it that way, or have they adjusted?
I think they have, in fairness, they have adjusted somewhat, though clearly not enough. Goldman Sachs has gone back to doing many of the things they did before. Now they're just doing them with less leverage. The biggest problem is that Wall Street is going back to many of their old ways. The good news, though, is I think they have changed the compensation practices, though the number is still staggering. There are issues. They have taken down leverage. They are now modeling these other issues, assuming that actually markets can fall. So all of those things are good, but there is still an enormous amount of risk in the system.
Sheila Bair, the FDIC chair, said somebody has to take away the punch bowl, and it can be very difficult to take away the punch bowl when you know people are making money at it. Well, so this means that really this is government's responsibility. No?
Oh, it's absolutely government's responsibility. And that's the other part of the equation. So we sit here, and I've written columns probably every week for the past month, wagging the finger at Wall Street. But there's a huge role for government to play in all this, and that they did play, or frankly didn't play, that allowed much of this to go on.
Andrew, I have to end it there, unfortunately. Andrew Ross Sorkin, author of Too Big to Fail, reporter and columnist for The New York Times. Thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you.